Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
All right, let's be real about something. As we get older, get kids, pets, multiple jobs, it becomes harder and harder to find the right time to connect to your partner. But when you do get that sliver of a moment, you need to be ready. That's where Blue Chew comes in. Blue Chew is the first chewable with the same FDA-approved active ingredients as Viagra and Cialis, so you know it works. Blue Chew is prescribed online and shipped straight to your door in a discreet package, so no in-person doctor's visit, no waiting in the pharmacy, best of all, no more awkwardness. Right now, we've got a special deal for our listeners. Visit BlueChew.com and get your first order free when you use our special promo code ARMCHAIR. Just pay $5 shipping. Again, that's BlueChew.com, promo code ARMCHAIR to try it free. Blue Chew is the better, cheaper, faster choice, and we thank them for sponsoring the podcast. You are listening to The Bird Calls on the Armchair All-American Network. For more on your Pelicans, go to iTunes, search The Bird Calls, and subscribe today. Fans, welcome to another episode of the Bird Calls podcast. I'm your host, contributor to thebirdrights.com, Preston Ellis. And today we're going to be talking media day takeaways, practice overreactions, Pel's hype videos going potentially too far, and so much more. First up, we've got Ali Cosell joining us in a moment. Behind him, we've got the Prince of the Protocol and proud father to two fur babies. Kevin, when's the last time we were on a podcast together?
It's been a long time since you and I have been on one. It's been a while since I've been on one, period. I was just telling David, like, when we signed on here, I was all confused how to sign in because the whole format is completely different now. But, yeah, I can't remember the last time we were together.
Sorry, that was me. I've still got a 504 number, even though I live in New Orleans. And, unfortunately,
you don't live in New Orleans.
I know. The person who previously had this phone number, I think, passed away because I get life insurance calls and updates like pretty much every single day. So I hope they're okay wherever they are and just change their phone number. You just heard David Grubbs voiced. I think it's safe to call you the controversial host of Hard in the Paint on 1280 AM. And of course, the man that Etwan Moore called negative. David, what's going on, man?
It's a new season, Preston. We're not going backwards here.
We're turning over a new leaf.
That's right. And I will never, I wouldn't associate myself with controversy. What I would say is that as people I hope have come to know and possibly appreciate over my time here, that I just say what I think to the best of my ability. And I'm never trying to be controversial. I'm just trying to be honest.
Uncomfortable truths doesn't make it controversial, you know?
Controversy finds you. All right, you guys, we can follow them at Kevin Beat for Bounce, at DM Grub. Of course, you can follow me at Preston Ellis. We've got a lot to talk about, you guys. Of course, Media Day was on Monday, as it was for most teams that weren't playing overseas in the preseason. And we had some pretty noticeable or recognizable or, I guess, trending type quotes. Of course, JJ Redick had a good one. Zion, of course, spoke beautifully again. Just seems like the right kind of player to represent any organization, much less New Orleans. And then we had David Griffin. I'll go ahead and start with Kevin. I think we were all sort of anticipating David Griffin kind of pumping the brakes, kind of like Jeff Weltman does with Markel Fultz. You know, we're going to take this one day at a time. We're going to improve incrementally over the course of a season, see how these guys, you know, gel together. We're going to be patient, but we're going to play hard. No. He just threw fire over everything and said, "We're out here to beat people's asses." What was your reaction to that, Kevin?
I mean, it didn't shock me at all. I think that you will look at the way he built this team and everything he said from the beginning is that we're here to win now and build a sustaining winning culture. So I would expect him to talk that way. I mean, when you're talking about him sort of fan flames, I think it's more about protecting Zion and the expectations on him. But as the team as a whole, I think he has a lot of confidence that this team is ready to compete now and to compete for a playoff spot. I mean, you look, it's a great roster from top to bottom. Like, you know, at least 15 solid NBA players, which is not something we've had in ever, I don't think, since the Hornets washed up on our shores. So I mean, it wasn't shocking to me. It's what I expect from him, honestly.
All right, let's pass this over to Grubb. Same question. Obviously, David Griffin kind of resembles at this point in time like a professional wrestler, like maybe even a WWE manager. He is out there. He is the spokesperson for the franchise. He is pumping everybody up. Like Kevin said, he's protecting Zion. But everybody else, he's touting as MVP players. He called Derek Favors untapped offensive potential. He's just everybody's hype man right now. Is that what you've come to expect from executive vice president of NBA organizations?
What? Yeah. Well, over the entire league, you know.
Yeah, just how unusual is it?
Well, I mean, I think he's in that select group with guys like, you know, Masai up in Toronto. There's just very few GMs or executive vice presidents who make themselves out front individuals. I mean, you know, Magic Johnson did it with the Lakers, but not with much impact, clearly. You know, most tend to stay in the back and let the players and the coaches do the talking. I think Griffin understood that coming in, there needed to be a shift in personality relative to the way the franchise was before. There was a lack of engagement felt by fans, by reporters, by observers, whomever. And it is, in year one especially, his job to create a new atmosphere. And he has to be the one who leads that, because the failures before were so closely associated with one individual. And so when you break that up and you start bringing in the talent that he's brought in, when you start bringing in the other people in the brain trust that the organization now has, I think you have to sell people. You have to sell the fans on what they have, because they may not know. They've seen a lot of these guys one or two times a year and may not understand just how good a player is or what their skill set is. So you have to explain that. And then when you're talking about organization, what's your vision? You need to articulate that. And Griffin is doing a very good job of that. At times, yes, it can feel hokey because it's so much. But at the same time, it's always captivating. Like, you can't help but listen because of his delivery, because of the confidence that he has behind it. And clearly everyone in the organization is in lockstep on it, not out of some sense of fear, but out of an actual belief. So I think that he's doing a fantastic job with that. And I think it's a necessary thing at this point. If he's still that way in year three, then I think we have a problem.
All right, Kevin, I've kind of got a two-part question for you, so kind of answer it as you will. Griffin is painting Drew Holiday as the face of the franchise. However, I think it's fair for us to say over this podcast that many of the people that we had access to previously, we no longer do. They're keeping things pretty tight, lock and key, so that the only people you can really access are Alvin Gentry and David Griffin. Everybody else has a lot of red tape. With that being said, even though he doesn't want, you know, some of the members of the organization talking to the press all the time, he is, I think, probably involved in a lot of these athletes getting interviews with Adrian Wojnarowski, getting shoe deals, getting all kinds of sponsorships that maybe they wouldn't previously have had access to. What do you take away from his approach, kind of shielding his players from the press, all the while behind the scenes helping to, I don't know, expand their image through sponsorships?
Yeah, you know, sometimes oversaturation can dilute a product in a way. I mean, it's, you know, it may be a little bit frustrating for us that are local on the scene trying to cover the team that, you know, want to have interviews and want to get sound bites from players. But I think, you know, the guys like with the credentials like David and Ollie and are at practices and get to talk to players after. That's still true, correct, David? I mean,
yes.
Right. Yeah. So that's still happening. But you're seeing, I mean, I don't necessarily think it's so much restricted, but it's, you know, he's funneling it in the right ways and sending it to ways where a clear direct message is sent. So it's always on point. Everything's sort of tied together, but you can't really say that he's stopping them from talking. I mean, you know, you have two guys on the roster that have podcasts and, you know, other players are going on their podcast. So these guys are getting out there and talking still. It's just, I mean, and also it's early yet. So I think it's hard to really say that that's a thing, but maybe I just haven't felt it because I'm not really out there trying to talk to players. I'd like to sit back and watch and hear what they say from other people or whatever. So it's not really something that I really do often. So I maybe just haven't felt it, but it doesn't really seem that way to me.
Yeah, I'll pass this off to Grubb and see his reaction to it. There's a lot of people that I previously had access to, and now every single one of those people's answers are all universal. I'm not allowed to talk to you. Mm-hmm. Everything has to start with David Griffin. I don't know if you've run into that yet, David. I'll pass this off to you next.
Yeah, absolutely I have, because you know I host The Daily Show, so I'm always looking for guests, and especially you want people close to the organization so you can have the most accurate information possible and have the most credible information possible. And yeah, I've run up into those same walls of just, these are the two people you can speak to. And if they're available, you'll get them. And if not, you may not even get a response right now. So I don't know if it's them regrouping and trying to make sure that they have a strategy in place for the season. And that will change as we go forward. They're just trying to make sure that the messages are consistent and, you know, from the organization. And I can fully understand that as somebody who's run communication departments. But at the same time, I think it will get looser, as we go forward. I think the players, there are a number of engaging personalities. Drew Holiday has become much more open over the last two seasons. Zion Williamson is clearly a personality who will be in a lot of places as the season goes forward. I think Derek Favors is somebody who will be that gets communicated with frequently. Josh Hart, as you said, is a podcaster. JJ Redick won't be holding his tongue, I don't think. So I think that right now it's just more about setting an early tone. That would be my belief and my hope. And then as we go forward, as those relationships are understood, as Griffin gets a better feel for the marketplace, I think things will loosen. But you're absolutely right. It's tight right now.
Kevin, let's go over to you and talk about some of these hype videos. Obviously, we've got that billboard in New Orleans with Zion Williamson, just basically proclaiming that we do more as a unit. We had the initial Won't Bow Down video in which, you know, you've got some actors in the video saying it's not going to come easy to you. And now just yesterday, we had a new video basically dictating we don't need a king in New Orleans. And meanwhile, you've got David Griffin kind of touting Drew Holiday as an MVP candidate, but it's a not so thinly veiled shot at LeBron James and Anthony Davis for wanting to team up in Los Angeles. He also had another quote saying that if you need that kind of allure, then you're not for us. What do you make of all these hype videos, Kevin, and their message?
Well, you know, like I have a history of writing about how the Pelicans always seem to just slightly miss the mark on things in when it comes to marketing and design. It's been frustrating over the years. And then when the Won't Bow Down came out, I was kind of excited because I was like, okay, cool. I thought they were referencing Mardi Gras Indians, and I thought they were going to bring finally a like not cliche typical thing that you always talk about into the mix and focus more on other things in the community. But then it started to turn into like this anti-LeBron, anti-AD marriage kind of thing. And I just feel like it's kind of lame. I mean, you know, it's kind of like if you have a friend that, you know, breaks up with their significant other and all they do is talk about that significant other all the time, even though they have both parties have moved on and like the person that they're with now is this amazing person that is so diverse and so wonderful and so nice and caring. And there's this great potential for a match. And then but they're just still here complaining about or talking shit about their ex and their ex's new partner. And that's kind of what it's starting to feel like, which is disappointing because I understand like that people are still upset about Anthony Davis. And I applaud anytime anybody wants to have some good jokes to throw out about anything. I mean, I don't take things very seriously. So, you know, joking about things like that are cool, but to make it like that, the fact that Anthony Davis wanted out and LeBron James orchestrated this whole thing to get him to the Lakers, to make that the focal point of your marketing for a team that is, like I said earlier, just stacked with NBA talent and it's the pieces to be an extremely fun team that is going to be very fun to watch and very exciting to watch. And you have this other talent in Zion Williamson, who is like everything we wish Anthony Davis would have been from the personality perspective. Now, can he live up to it on the court? We'll see. I mean, he has, obviously, I believe that he will. Most people believe that he will. Then you have a guy like Lonzo, who's an incredible passer, setting him up. You have Drew Holiday. You got great shooters. And J.J. Redick, Josh Hart's, I think, going to be a great shooter again. You know, you got Derek Favors, solid anchor of the defense, underrated player. We saw Andy Bailey tweet about his stats when Gobert was off the court for the Jazz earlier today. I mean, that's a great player. We have a great starting five, and we have a lot of potential off the bench. So I just think to constantly dwell over the loss of Anthony Davis and the orchestration it took to get him to the Lakers is just let it go, man. Just embrace what we have now. I mean, why think about those things? Sure, when it's that week when Anthony Davis is coming back, if you want to relive all that, you want to fire off some jokes, great. But till then, I mean, let's focus on what we have instead of what we lost. And that's my opinion. But also, I am very well aware that I'm very naturally cynical, and also hype videos just and speeches don't do anything for me. Like those Drew Brees or even the DeMario Davis pregame speeches, like they don't mean anything to me. The only speeches that I've ever been moved by are like Bill Murray's speech in Rushmore, or like, I don't know, the JCVD speech that Jean-Claude Van Damme does in that movie, which is like ridiculous and dark, or the BoJack Horseman eulogy scene. I don't know. That's like the things that I get inspired by. But I understand that there's a market for that, and like there's a big, you know, a lot of people buy into that stuff. But for me, I just wish we would just let the Anthony Davis thing go and focus on what we have.
Grubb, his sentiments pretty much echo mine exactly, so I don't think I need to expand on that. I'm just gonna question you about the three different tangible items we have to draw from here: the Won't Bow Down video, the We Don't Need a King, and the All Together billboard. I think what they were trying to say is, you know, all for one, you know, one for all. This sort of thing. We don't need a king. We're a team filled with kings because you've got all these blue chip, high level prospects who are all playing together. But it does come across as a veiled shot at LeBron James and Anthony Davis. And I think we're all past that. So I think the error here was when you build these series of trajectory, videos, billboards, you want them to start at the base and you want them to grow. So if you start at Won't Bow Down, the next step is it's not going to be easy for you. The next step is we're going to beat your ass. And then it gets all the way to, we expect to be in it, to be in the Final Four. How would you have done this differently?
I think the focus really should have just been on more so renewal. That's what New Orleans is, constant renewal. You know, from the history of the city, whether it's flooding or hurricanes or fires or war, you know, civil war, all those things, New Orleans endures for better or for worse. And I think that's kind of the synergy that I was looking for this season, that, you know, that, hey, we've been through this before, we've been down before, and we're getting back up. And you had that, you had all of that. I think the family connection is fine. Everybody's all in. You wanted that. That's great. But the real connection, I think you feed into a bad energy. And I'm not typically one of those people who thinks about those things, but I think you feed into this the past. You don't want to go backwards. You don't want to look backwards. And what you want to look forward to is the future. And I thought that it's been worded in a very weird manner. It's been clunky. It has not flowed well. And I get, you know, people want to be defiant right now, but ultimately the product is not about defiance. It's about winning basketball games. And for the fan base, it's, you know, what do you care? You want stars. That's how fans are. The casual fan always wants stars. And you got one in Zion Williamson. You have one in Drew Holiday. You have no recognizable names. So to me, the easiest connection, the one that would have hit a home run to me, would have just been focusing on, man, we're reborn. We're going to do this. We're completely different. We have, you know, new faces. We have a new energy. We have new leadership. This is not what we were. And I think to say more of won't bow down, man, there's going to be a lot of stumbles. And maybe they won't give up. But I think that's a different tone than won't bow down too. It's to me, it's much more about resiliency. the process and moving forward, which are words that Griffin has used as well, I don't know where this edge all of a sudden came from. It doesn't ring true to me. Like Kevin said, it feels like an artificial pregame speech. And I don't think I needed that. I don't think most people needed that. I think what they really wanted was for the team to embrace them more so than to be in a fight against the rest of the league. But that's just my thought.
I think one thing,
sorry, I'll just talk really quickly, Kevin, then I'll turn it over. One thing that it does do, Ollie, you got a lot of background noise. Are you clanging pots? What are you doing over there? Okay, he's on mute. One thing that I do with any press coverage is good coverage, Kevin. The Pelicans haven't had a lot of commercials as far as I've seen. So anything to draw attention to Zion Williamson, to Drew Holiday is ultimately a good thing. Anything putting the spotlight on that franchise is ultimately a good thing. Of course, we want to refine it a little bit. What were you going to say, Kevin?
No, I was just going to say, like, as much as I like to keep the Pelicans and the Saints separate, I'm very much into that. I agree a lot of what David said, because I feel like what the Pelicans are going through right now are the Saints 2006 season, you know, and I think it mirrors it very well, you know, new coach, new star coming in, new rookie, you know, new face of the franchise, and you know, that block punt and the start it all off, you know, if we have that some sort of game like that to ignite this season, then I think, you know, it's really, this is the building block for what will eventually be a championship contending team, which we've seen the Saints become. But this is like that drastic change. You know, we went through the hardship that we went through this time was not nearly what, you know, we went through with Katrina, but, you know, losing a star and having to rebuild, but then not rebuilding, just like restocking and reloading and just powering up and coming together. Like the whole community came together at that point, and this whole team is coming together with one focus. You know, I think focusing on something like that would have been better than to be worried about what's happening in Los Angeles.
Phoenix reborn from the ashes. Speaking of Phoenixes being reborn from the ashes, we have editor-in-chief, the man installing tiles, drywall, yelling at air conditioning specialists. And hey, you guys, he's lost 13 pounds. What's up, Ollie Cosell?
What's up, guys? How you doing? I am just now feeding my dog, so that's why the clanging noise is in the background.
Well, we're all dog lovers on this podcast. I think all of us have dogs. Ollie, obviously we've got a lot of questions. You were there for media day. Let's go over to practice because none of us have been privy to the stuff going on there. Obviously, you've seen these guys in scrimmage. We had two teams going head-to-head today. Talk about some of your biggest takeaways from the first 2 days of training camp.
Well, yesterday it was we didn't see any kind of scrimmaging, drill work, nothing like that. All it was just basically after practice, the players that tend to like to stay behind and practice some shooting, talking with coaches, and really the only thing that amounted to was seeing both Kendrick Williams really going hard after when it looked like he was drained. Boy, Teresa Witherspoon, she looks incredible. She was driving Kendrick to his last ounce of his reserves in completing what I look like to be like 7 or 8 three-point shots from all the stations on the three-point perimeter. And of course, Lonzo stayed by far the longest, you know, his shot, credit all the world to him because it's been broken, right? Everybody's talked about his form, you know, ever since he's entered the league and how it seemed to be the shot was starting always from the left side of his face, even though he releases it with his right hand, but credit to him. He's moved it now towards the center, kind of more the center, right down in front of his nose, the center of his face. And it looks just to be a prettier release. There's no kind of hitches anywhere. It's just one fluid motion up and through. And yesterday, the shot wasn't falling much. I saw a couple only spells where he made about 3 or 4 in a row. But other than that, he really struggled with his shot yesterday. But today, boy, he was really knocking them in after practice. As far as scrimmaging, we only saw a little bit today. Most of that was all really just out of timeouts on the sideline plays. So it was really just, you know, 3-4 seconds worth of scrimmaging. There was nothing up and down the court. But from what we gather, Zion has been showing off the athleticism. And as everybody now knows, he showed off one incredible dunk in front of us when we were there. So while we haven't seen it, the guys are giddy. They're all like, this guy's literally the mutant. And even that dunk, you know, I asked a couple of players what they thought of it. They're like, yeah, it's not really anything different from what else Zion's already been doing or that they've seen before. So all the guys are really enjoying themselves, but they're all working hard. you can tell that it's taking some of the younger guys and the new guys a little bit longer to acclimate either to Alvin or just themselves, because almost between every timeout play, kind of you could see either the coaches or the veteran players. And I was really just watching, you know, who's going to be playing the most next year, and that's either starters plus J.J. Redick. And J.J. and Drew were leading often those conversations with whatever they were saying. We weren't close enough to hear it, but you could tell that they were, of course, it's big teaching moments, right? And that's what training camp's for. So we haven't gotten any really good stuff. You know, maybe tomorrow they'll start going up and down the court, because that's when you start to see, like, what groups are running together, what's working, who's hot, who's not. So until we see that, we haven't really gleaned that much from the first 2 days.
All right, let's go back to Kevin, because we've got a lot of questions on Lonzo Ball. Chris Connor even wrote us a question. We'll start with Lakers boy. Basically, he said, how fast did your opinions change on Brandon Ingram and Lonzo Ball after the trade? And I'm going to pose the question to you as this. We've got a couple of questions on this. Ali mentioned that his shot has changed, but just how important is Lonzo Ball going to be to the Pelicans' success this season? Obviously, you can even start J.J. Redick alongside Drew Holiday in the backcourt. That might even feasibly work a little bit better than Lonzo back there, but they're going to give Lonzo the first shot at the starting point guard position, really let him run the show. Brandon Ingram said he's going to dictate the offense. We're just going to react to it. How good does he have to be for this Pelicans team to succeed?
Well, first off, to go to Lakers boy, which is a great handle, by the way. like that. Anyway, to answer his question, my opinion hasn't really changed. When we're talking about the trade, and I think we've covered this a lot already, at the time when the Lakers trade was first out there, we're talking about a player in Lonzo whose family was saying they didn't want him here, and he was basically not saying anything to counter that. So it seemed like it was a player that didn't want to be here, that we were going to have to move, that has had health issues, that can't shoot. And then Brandon Ingram, same, another guy who is dealing with a major health issue at the time, who also had questions in his game, who you also had to make a decision on immediately, basically, if you wanted him long-term because of him entering free agency this coming summer, and then weighing that against other offers. And this is before all of those other draft picks got thrown in. Now, in a vacuum, I like Brandon Ingram as a player. I still have questions about, you know, him being a consistent jump shooter. I hope his health issues are past him. We'll see. With Lonzo, I'm going to have to worry about his health, obviously. I love his playmaking. I always have. I think he's an incredible passer. I think he's an incredible defender. He doesn't have a jumper yet that we can rely on. I don't necessarily think that's a terrible thing if it never develops. If it does develop, then it's a great thing. But he's totally bought in, and that's the big change that, as along with all those draft picks that got thrown in, that made this a deal that we're now happy about. You know, just saying that we didn't like these guys is not the truth, and that we changed our opinions on them. We still have the same concerns, but we also see changes in them, and we see how it fits the situation, plus with all the other things that we got in the deal and how other deals fell apart because of other situations like Kyrie not wanting to sign Boston, all those things. Now, Lonzo, I think he's going to, if he can stay healthy, which I, you know, I have faith in Aaron Nelson, but we'll have to see, because he hasn't played that many games in his first 2 years, you know, in the league. So it's right to be worried about his health, I think. But I think in the system, playing fast, getting to the rim, we've seen a guy like Rondo, we've seen a guy like Elfrid Payton have success in this offense, and those are two guys who can't shoot either. And I think Lonzo is obviously a better defender than both of those guys. He's a better rebounder than those guys. I think he's I don't know if he's a better passer than Rondo. I think he's a different kind of passer. I think he's a different kind of player than Rondo mentally. He doesn't bring some of the intangibles that Rondo brought, but I think he brings a lot more effort at this point in his career. So that's a plus for him. Now, if he develops a jumper, great. I saw the new jumper. It looks better, but I also am not ready to totally buy into it yet, because also I know how those things go with muscle memory. People, you know, as fatigue sets in, as season drags on, people start to go back to what feels more comfortable, more natural. So we'll see if it lasts and we'll see if it's effective, because like Ollie said, like the first practice he was terrible. And then we just saw today he was nailing jump shots. He was like 9 for 10, I think I saw them say. So it's a mixed bag, but again, I don't necessarily think he needs to have a jumper for him to be a success in this offense, because or on this team in general, because I think what he brings defensively will help tremendously. His playmaking will help tremendously. And I think having another guy in that backcourt that can let Drew not have to defend the toughest perimeter player all the time, so that Drew can focus more on offense and can be more of an offensive threat, will be a great benefit, because Drew's never had a partner really on the wing that he could rely on at all defensively, you know, whether it's at the three or at the one. So having another guy that can just take the load off of him sometimes defensively and free him up to exert more energy on the offensive end is going to be a huge boost. So I'm excited about how it's going to work. I think Lonzo will fit into the system well. I think, you know, we've already heard about full court alley-oops. We've seen the out-of-bounds alley-oop play. I think it's going to be exciting. I think it's going to be fun. And I just hope he can last. You know, I hope all the foot issues are behind him, and he has a healthy rest of his career. And I think he looks like he's bought into the system here, and he enjoys the community here. So that's a great plus already.
Gambling. It's not the most prevalent of topics at the family barbecue, but the truth is, it can be quite fun. Picking a couple of friends to play some friendly wagers before a game can immediately raise the stakes and make your Sundays even more exhilarating. And that's why I go to MyBookie. It's fast, it's easy, and they pay when you win. Let's face it, where you're betting is just as important as who you're betting on. Football fans, you can even bet after kickoff, so if it looks like your bet is fading, just take the other side. If you like to bet a lot, try a parlay. You can multiply your winnings and brag to your friends as the money rolls in. But now is the best time to join, because MyBookie will double your first deposit. Use promo code CHAIR to activate the offer. That's promo code CHAIR. Visit MyBookie.ag today. You play, you win, you get paid. I think Kevin pretty well covered that question. That was also from David Rose. I know that David Grubb and I have talked off air about Lonzo Ball's relationship with his father, with Big Baller Brand. How do you think that relationship with his father and with that company, and kind of taking matters into his own hand? He said to Adrian Wojnarowski, he's changed. He's his own man. The birth of his daughter changed a lot of things. Interactions between he and Triple B manager, that really changed who he was as a person. How do you think his personal life is going to affect his professional life, David?
I think this is a great thing for Lonzo, ultimately. Having him get out of L.A., where he had been, you know, high school, college, and as a professional, and put him in a situation where he's much more dependent on himself, is, first of all, it's good for any young adult. You know, living on your own and away from your family is just part of life that we all have to go through, and it happens at different stages for each of us. But, you know, that's how you figure out how to be an adult, is the farther when you have to depend on yourself each day, and there are no safety nets. And there aren't any safety nets for him here. Also, his professional situation is no longer, you know, he's not walking in the door with the icon of a franchise saying, you're anointed as the next me. You know, so it's a much different situation here. He looks around and he sees veterans. He looks around and there's not a situation where you know that they're looking to get rid of you to find a LeBron James or an Anthony Davis. David Griffin and Alvin Gentry genuinely want him to be successful here. Now, whether or not that happens is up to him, and it's up to things that are out of his control as well. But I think Lonzo has the opportunity here in New Orleans, and with this franchise. I don't know if he's going to be a perennial all-star, but I think he can be one of the most valuable role players in the league at the very least. Because again, going back to when we first talked about this, the things that he can do cannot be taught. The things that he cannot do well right now can be improved. And I think that when you have those kind of special skill sets, you try to take advantage of them. You don't let those players get out of your hands without giving it everything you have to see if they can be successful. And I firmly believe he's the kind of player who has the drive to get at that. I think this offseason, yeah, he did hear that he's been a disappointment. He did hear that he can't shoot. He did hear that he's a bust. And I think that it's going to motivate him, but more so than anything, he's a guy who's used to winning, who's used to being a star. And I think he wants to get back to that level where his game is respected. And so I don't have any doubt that he's going to come in and give everything to the Pelicans. We just have to see whether or not over time it works. But I think this is a great situation for him. He's out of the major market. He's out of the limelight. He doesn't have to carry this. And there are people on this team who will get the questions far before he does.
All right,
Ali. Guys, I want to jump in here just real quick on some of my moments I had from practice today in the scrimmage with Lonzo Ball. Guys, he's really taking to this team quickly. They sang, I think it was happy birthday to Jim Boylan. He's one of the assistant coaches right after they finished up. And right when they were almost done singing happy birthday, I saw Lonzo kind of walk away from the crowd. And then both he and Lonzo were just like play fighting like brothers, right? Lonzo suddenly grabbed him. I don't know how he managed to get his arms around most of that chest, but he did. And you just could tell that these guys have quickly become friends. And then, of course, Lonzo, I saw him like not 3 minutes later, once you're walking off the court, Lonzo went up to Drew and asked him a question. I'm pretty sure it's probably about one of the last few plays that they ran, but you can tell he's already picking the brain of Drew. He trusts Drew. So I'm loving everything that Lonzo Ball's already showing us. And it's just been, you know, just a handful of moments on a practice court.
Ali, let's continue this line of questioning. We start with Lonzo Ball. Let's get over to Brandon Ingram. Obviously, you've had some brief glimpses of him as well as media day in today's practice. And of course, we've chronicalized after the All-Star break, he had this momentous display of scoring prowess, 57% from the floor, 53% from three-point range, averaging 28 points a game, 7.5 rebounds per game, just 2.5 assists. But a lot of the offense was dictated by him, and we've seen spurts of him kind of operating as a de facto point forward in the past. This guy does have the ceiling that could bring him out as the Pelicans' best player should he reach all these benchmarks that he was doing in February and March of last year. How has he looked to you so far?
He's looked good. I haven't really seen him even have a moment yet where he's had the ball, had a nice important decision to make, and he made it. Like I said, we've barely caught anything but just glimpses, right? But here's one thing I will say about Brandon Ingram, or two things. First, I've heard that there's some amongst the Pelicans that think he could lead the Pelicans this year in scoring. That it's not far-fetched to think that he'll average more than Drew, Zion, and everybody else if he's healthy, which it looks like, by all accounts, he is. Second thing is, you can tell he's kind of a team guy, because whenever we ask him questions about himself, you can barely hear him, even if you're like 3 or 4 feet away. But when you ask him about some of the other players, he actually lightens up, sparks up. For instance, I asked him about Zion today, the dunk, and a few other things. And Brandon suddenly, you could tell his whole demeanor changed. So he definitely prefers, if anybody ever talks to him, ask him about the other Pelicans. Don't ask him to talk about himself, about how his three-point shots come along, stuff like that. Because he knows what he has to do. He's a young kid, right? And he's been hearing it probably, you know, every minute of the day being out in L.A. And now he's here. Of course, you can tell some of the pressure is off. But again, I'm really liking what I'm seeing out of him personality-wise, because, you know, all we knew about him was that he was kind of just a very quiet guy who kind of just had not really reached anywhere close to his potential. Some were even using that bust word. But until, Preston, like you said, until those last 15 games or so of last year, where he actually showed he can do a lot. And like I said, there's some within the Pels that really think this guy could be one of their most important and their leading scorer players.
All right, let's go over to Kevin. Kevin, we've pretty much touched on Brandon Ingram and Lonzo Ball at this point. I'm going to answer this one really quickly from Friendly Neighborhood Sobby Boy. He says, what's the biggest difference between first open practice this year and last year? I saw a direct quote from Frank Jackson just saying the energy levels, everybody's going 110% at all times. These guys are just full out every single time down the floor. And he said that was a dramatic difference from last season. I think we saw that in the regular season, how these guys would kind of take plays off or just didn't have the energy in the first half of the season that they did in the second half of the season. Here's what I want to talk to you about, Kevin. They continued to ask Frank Jackson about the rotation, and he said, that doesn't matter. We just want to, you know, win ball games. But obviously in practice, guys are going to start separating themselves. Guys are going to start fighting hard for a spot in those nine-man rotations. Steve Clifford at the Magic Media Day said, if you don't play guys a lot of minutes, they can't perform well. So, Kevin, right now, gun to your head, nine guys, maybe 10 guys in this rotation. Who are you cutting out?
Well, I think you missed the point of that previous question. He was asking about the open practice, and I think the open practice coming up Sunday where the old fans can go.
Saturday,
yeah, sorry. So I think the biggest thing is that we season ticket holders had to get tickets to ensure that they can get in. So that shows you how much demand there is to see this team play. So that's a huge difference, even though last year was also very populated. But to get back to this question, I think Frank is definitely looking on the outside in. You know, I would have said Darius before he got hurt, but injury took him out of that already. I'd say as much as they talk up Ja every year, I just don't think Gentry's going to play him much, even if he's looking really well and he maybe will perform great on another team. I just don't think that Gentry likes that kind of center that he has in Ja. So I don't expect him to get many minutes. I would expect him to default smaller to Zion and Melly at center. And Jackson Hayes would get in there some too, obviously. I think Etuan's on the outside looking in, although, you know, he was one of our best shooters last year, years before. So, you know, there's potential for him to work his way into the mix, but I think it's going to be a little bit difficult for him. And I think Kendrick's is still going to get minutes because of his playmaking and his rebounding and his ability to allow you to go smaller. So I think those main guys are out. I think Frank's really going to struggle to get minutes because he hasn't really shown anything in terms of playmaking. I think he's an incredible athlete. I think he's got an okay jumper, but I don't think he has the handle to beat anybody off the dribble and really thrive off of the athleticism he has. He has to be used more as a cutter, and maybe this time they'll use him differently, but it is the same coaching staff. So I think I think they still view him somewhat as a combo guard or a one just based off of his size, but that's really not what he is. He's really a super athletic two guard that needs to be a cutter and a spot up shooter. And I just don't think, I think he's an NBA player. Don't get me wrong. I think he's a good player. I just don't think with this roster and with the way they're trying to use them, it works on this team.
All right, that was from Bishop Pastor RW. And just talking about the rotation, Kevin's got Okafor and Jackson Hayes off the floor. And David, that means that there's going to be a three-man split between the four and the five, potentially, with Zion Williamson, Derek Favors, obviously, you know, Brandon Ingram or Kenrich Williams can slide into the four. But what that does mean, Kevin's rotation, is that Nicolo Melli is going to get a sizable chunk of minutes, potentially at the four and at the five. Obviously, we haven't seen him play any NBA basketball yet, but what were your impressions of him just in what you saw from Media Day? Obviously, he's finally starting to practice with these guys. What was your overall impression just from those brief moments you had seeing him?
Well, it's clear he has a good relationship with his teammates already. You know, they're inside jokes with him and Jackson Hayes and, you know, now. So he's adjusting well. The thing for him, as it is with the first thing that we always do with European players, is can he play defense at an NBA level? And that's going to be the thing, whether he can shoot or not. If he can't defend, he can't stay on the floor. So the thing that we got out of Nico Mirotić that we saw last year playing that, again, like Kevin said, a hybrid 4-5 role that Nico did at times, was that Nico was an exceptional rebounder. We didn't realize how good a rebounder he was. And he was a better defender than we thought in the low post. So I think for Melli, that's going to be the adjustment. Is he strong enough? Is he able to move? Is he going to get rebounds? Because offensively, you know, the concept is, with Zion potentially playing some minutes at the five in a Draymond Green type role, I think the same thing is what you would do with Melli, is that you'd want him at the top, operating, looking and seeing the court, making passes to guys, and then moving and repositioning himself for shots or cuts to the basket. So I think offensively he's going to be fine because he's shown those instincts, and we've seen that on film. But the defensive side is going to be the biggest adjustment for him if he wants to get those minutes at the five in particular. Before, I think you can hide him with his shooting, and I think with the other defenders that you can put around him. But if he's not able to get on the glass as a five, and if he's not able to defend at that position, then that changes his value. But I think, again, it's hard to say anything at this point because, like Ollie said, none of us have really seen these guys performing together. And when you have 66% of your roster being guys who have never taken the court as an entire group, it's going to take some time for us to really know what people's true skill sets are, because I don't think they'll be revealed in total during the preseason because so much experimentation will go on and there's so little practice time. I like what Melly brings to the table, but I still think that there is space for Jahlil Okafor in the rotation, because though we think of Ja as a traditional back to the basket, we've seen him expand his game, and his effect at certain times and in certain matchups, I think he does give the Pelicans a strategic advantage in his soft hands and his ability to create offense, very near the basket. So I think there will be time for him. I don't think he logs 18 to 20 minutes a night, but I do think he is a semi-regular in the rotation. The rest is just going to be the perimeter's far more difficult to sort out than the front court. And we've talked about that and we've written about that. So, but Melly is in a good position if he can come in and defend. They certainly have an investment in him and they want him to stick. And so the same with Lonzo and the same with a couple of these other guys, they're going to be given every opportunity to prove that they are who the Pelicans think they are.
All right, Ollie's got one question left in him, and then we're going to have to send him on his merry way. This is from Friendly Neighborhood Sobby Boy. He basically said, who is doing the most talking on the court? How much do you think Zion weighs now? Who's the best ball handler for the gray team? Here's what I'm going to ask to you. Thank you so much, Friendly Neighborhood Sobby Boy. Just from your initial impressions, like he said, who's doing the most talking? Who is taking on that leadership role in your eyes so far?
JJ Redick. I think there's no mistake about it either. Derek Favors is a lot in the mold of Drew Holiday, and we kind of always knew that about him, just watching enough basketball, following the NBA for as long as most of the fans that I know anyways have. But JJ, yeah, I didn't know much about him before he came other than, he was a fiery spark plug, and that's exactly what he is. But it looks like with age, he's now 35, it's kind of softened him to where he'll crack a lot more smiles and jokes than he used to. At least that's what people tell me, so... He, like I said, I was shocked. I mean, Drew said one or two things, like, for instance, in the huddle that I was really paying attention to when Zion and Lonzo and Brandon Ingram were all ears. But then, boy, JJ Redick talked for, like, next two or three. And these guys all listen, so it's great to see. One other underrated guy that I think the team's going to really start listening to and following is actually Nicolò Melli. I mean, this guy, nobody knew anything about him, right, when we first heard the announcement the Pels were signing him. And obviously, none of the players here in America probably knew of the guy. But he's really fit in that locker room like that. For instance, when they were singing that happy birthday that I mentioned earlier to Joe Boylan, Nicolò Melli grabbed Zion around one neck. And then with his other arm, he grabbed Nikhil Alexander-Walker. And they started swaying back and forth. So, I mean, it really shows what this guy and how he's going to be in the locker room, right? We've always heard kind of how Europeans, and that's why they've always, like the Spanish teams, for instance, always gave the American, by far and away, the best team ever, usually in the Olympics, the Americans, a lot of trouble. Well, that's why. There's a certain camaraderie that is exuded by a lot of these Euros. It's, who knows as to why. Maybe it's the way they've grown up, the way they play sports, but it's there. We kind of saw with Nico last year before as well, before he was traded away. And I think Melly's got the same. So I think he's going to be a nice presence too.
All right. We know that Ollie's got to go. Thank you for your time, Ollie. We'll get over to Kevin. Two more questions, and then we'll let you guys go. Kevin, this is from Clint White, basically talking about second-round prospects that the Pelicans have attempted to develop in previous years, from Cheick Diallo, Frank Jackson, now Didi Silva. Just in your estimation, what would you think about Frank Jackson going into this season versus Didi? Who do you think is ultimately going to pay bigger dividends for the Pelicans in the future?
Well, you got to look at the fact that Frank is his contract's coming up soon, and he was picked by a different regime. So I think he has a harder sell at the roster spot than what Didi does, because this regime is the one that picked him. I tell you, Didi looked great in Summer League, and he's looking great so far in Australia. Obviously, those aren't good judges of what will translate into the NBA. But you could also say that, you know, Frank hasn't shown that playmaking ability in the Summer League yet or in NBA minutes. So I have my doubts about Frank Jackson being here long term. And again, I don't want it to sound like I'm hating on Frank Jackson because I do think he's a good player. I just think that this might not be the right team for him. I think he needs to go somewhere where he can be an off-ball cutter, spot-up shooter, sort of a sixth man or eighth man, something like that in that role. Whereas here we have a lot better talent at the we don't have that. Maybe don't have his athleticism, but we have better overall talent from other guards in this rotation that offer a whole lot more flexibility. And I think Didi is a guy that projects to have a lot more flexibility. He showed some playmaking ability. The way he fought through screens in Summer League showed that he could probably be a at least an adequate defender, if not a plus defender. And then his stroke right now in Australia is looking fabulous. So we'll see. Only time will tell, but you know, I do think Frank's on the outside looking in right now with this team for the long haul.
All right, we'll get you guys out on this, David. The Pelicans have a game against the Atlanta Hawks on Monday. I don't know if we'll be back before then. What are you hoping to see from this first preseason game?
I think anytime you go into preseason, the things that I look for are communication between the players on the court. You look at, do they understand the basic concepts that the coaching staff is trying to implement? You're looking at effort. How hard are guys working when they're out there? I don't care about score because, again, the lineups are going to be quirky. The minutes are going to be inconsistent. So score, those things don't matter to me. What I want to see is, is this becoming a team? Are they getting the basics? Because I think, and Alvin said this at Media Day, the first thing they've got to do is implement this defense that Bizdelic is going to bring in. And the offense will come because what they do is predicated primarily on what they do defensively, stopping people from scoring. When you score 120 and you give up 130 every night, that's not going to cut it. And with his expectation of this being a top 10 or top 5 defensive team, that's what I'll be watching first. Who's guarding whom? What are the concepts that they're doing? How are they utilizing players? And then, like I said, effort and intensity and communication. Those are the things. I don't care how many shots guys make. I don't, other than where are they taking their shots? Are they taking shots they should be taking within the flow of the offense? But what their statistics look like at the end, unless they're turning it over a ton, unless they're just making bad decisions, I'm really not interested in the box score. It's much more of a feel thing for me in the preseason.
Ali, you're still with us, so I'm going to ask you another question. Obviously, Kevin earlier talked about the rotation, who fits in, who might potentially drop out. Who do you think the most is at stake for this Monday? Who needs to perform well immediately?
Ali ain't here.
Ali's not here. I guess he just left his phone on. Okay, let's go back to Kevin. We'll let you guys go on this. Kevin, who needs to perform well to ensure their spot, not necessarily with the roster, but just to get minutes going forward? Oh, I've muted him. It's going well, you guys. It's great podcast radio.
All right, Kevin, sorry.
I think it's fun for them to see what screw-ups we are. Kevin, go ahead, man.
All right. Well, I think I already talked about these two players, and I think Jahlil Okafor and Frank Jackson have the most at stake right now to stick with this team long-term and to earn minutes because I think they're kind of on the outside looking in at their position group. So I think those two have the most. I think it could be big for Kenrick if he can have a big game and a big preseason that could get him a lot more minutes because again he's also battling for rotation at the four and at the three that has a lot of players. So he's going to have to claw out his minutes as well because I think Melly obviously is high on their list to get minutes at the four. Zion, we have him already penciled in there for a lot of minutes. And then at the three, between Ingram, Hart, Moore will probably get minutes there.
JJ
will get minutes there. It's going to be a tough fight for him, but he brings a lot of versatility to his game. He's a good playmaker. He's a good rebounder. He's a good defender. So if he can show that he can also shoot a little bit better, more consistently, I think, you know, he'll get some rotation minutes, and I think that's going to be big for him. But what I'm looking forward to mostly is in that first game, because I think it's so early that I'm not worried about everything tying in and flowing perfectly. It's just some incredible dunks and passes, because think about it, we're going to have Zion and John Collins playing against each other. You know, you're going to have Trey Young and you're going to have Lonzo making passes to those two athletic bigs that can just jump like crazy. So I think it's just going to be a fun game. I'm not going to take the first one. I'm not going to worry too much about the first one because, you know, we got like 15 of the 20 guys are completely new, whole new system. So you can't expect them to have it really tightened up just for that first game with only a few days of practice, really. So I'm just hoping that it's fun and we see the athleticism and we see some semblance of good defense that leads to transition offense, because that's what this, as David said, this is what this team is built for, playing solid defense and scoring in transition, because it's not built for a half-court offense. But you don't need that with the great defenders that we've put together and the versatility of ball handlers to be able to create the break and score in transition. So you want to see a little bit of that, but I'm not going to freak out if we have a terrible defensive outing.
All right, David, you can follow him at DM Grub. What do you got coming for us? Tell our listeners where they can hear you on Hard in the Paint on 1280 AM, what times your show are, what you're working on. Tell them everything.
Okay, well, I got a lot going on. Hard in the Paint does air on WODT Sports 1280 from 8 to 10 a.m. Central every Monday through Friday. And you can also get that on the free iHeartRadio app. You can go to my website, hitpwithdg.com, as well. And for the Bird Rights, I'll be working on player profiles of Jahlil Okafor and Lonzo Ball. And I'm also working on a piece on that defensive strategy for the Pelicans. So those three will be coming up in the very near future. And I'm also, for CrescentCitySports.com, out this weekend is just hell for me, because Friday night I'm doing high school football. Saturday morning I'm at LSU. And then Saturday evening I will be at open practice. So if you're somewhere, I might be there.
All right, Kevin, are you working on any player profiles this week?
I'm the Jeffrey Lebowski of this group. Right now I'm not really doing anything. Chris is on me big time about writing the third New Orleans Index rating and a sequel to the movie. But I've been working on a lot of design projects at the moment, but I will be going to the open practice on Saturday, so hopefully that sparks me to get back into writing about the Pelicans, but I've been focused on other things at the moment.
Nice stuff. Thank you to our listeners. Chris Connor, Bad Guy Nova, AJ Vallon, and Swamp Dog had some great questions that we kind of covered. We didn't get to all of them. Thank you so much to you guys. Thank you so much, everyone else, for tuning in. I know you guys have a lot to choose from nowadays. All of a sudden, podcasts are popping up everywhere. More people are covering the Pelicans than ever before. But if you guys want to support us and our podcast, you can do so at patreon.com/PrestonEllis, or you can share this podcast and give us a 5-star rating on iTunes. I've got some more coming from you guys. If you are into Bleacher Report, I've got some Markel Fultz reported story coming tomorrow. I've also got player profiles for the Bird Rights on Etwan Moore and Derek Favors coming up, as well as some other stuff. Of course, we'll have podcasts coming to you guys in the next week or so, probably following the open practice, I think. If not then by Monday night against the Hawks. If you guys like what you're hearing, we don't ask much. Share this podcast. Rate us on iTunes. We appreciate it. I'm Preston Ellis. Let's go, Pels. Thank you for listening to The Bird Calls on the Armchair All-American Network. If you like what you're hearing, please take a moment to rate us on iTunes, retweet, share with your friends, and most importantly, subscribe today.